Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, with laundry room designs meant to bring calm to everyday routines. More at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The way we interact with others grows out of how we've been socialized, what cultures have raised us, where we place value and priority. Each of those forms our sense of etiquette. And we're not just talking about table manners. The way we conduct ourselves with others affects our relationships at home and in our social circles. It also impacts our careers. Last September, I spoke with Hilary Anger Elfenbein, professor of organizational behavior at Washington University in St. Louis and researcher of adult behavior and emotional intelligence, as well as with Asha Hornaday, founder of the Modern School of Manners. Asha is a certified etiquette consultant who works with people of all ages in manners and etiquette. Today, we're listening back to our conversation. I started by asking Asha what makes for good manners.
I like to think of manners as putting others at ease and making people feel comfortable around you. Mm-hmm. So that involves a lot of intention, that involves a lot of self-awareness. And usually what I tell people, even if you don't know the etiquette behind what is appropriate, read the room. And if you know what room you're in, if it's a professional setting, if it's a social setting, you are able to tell a lot about how you should behave. Mm-hmm. And that is a really good map of how you should move forward.
So let's not leave reading the room, because we're talking with my 8-year-old son a lot about that. What does that mean? Like, how do you do it?
Yeah. Observing people's behavior, observing people's attention, observing what others would deem as appropriate and inappropriate. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, you know, especially for young kids, because parents will call me and they'll say, hey, my kid keeps calling me dude. And I'm like, please fix them. And I'm like, well, I want to set expectations. There is a time and place where referring to someone as dude is appropriate. Mm-hmm. That is usually amongst friends. But it is not for you to call your parents dude or your grandparents or your teachers. So think about if that person would receive that information well, or if they would receive that interaction well. Mm-hmm. And if they won't receive that interaction well, put them at ease and approach them and speak to them in a way that would make them feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about delivery.
Correct.
So Hilary, you are the research person here. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic back in early 2020, there have been studies done on the rise of rudeness. And just this year, the Society of Human Resource Management surveyed 1,000 workers, and they shared that 66% of workers have experienced or witnessed incivility in their workplace within the past month, and over half saw incivility in just the last week of the surveys being conducted. Now, if we begin from a place that assumes people are being rude unintentionally, we could chalk this up to a lack of EQ. So, Hilary, can you break down what EQ is and what's sometimes misunderstood about it?
Absolutely. So I like that you started the question with deliberate and accidental, because a lot of rudeness is accidental. And I would put that into two categories, one of them being emotional intelligence. And we can chat about where that fits in with rudeness. And the other is being depleted. And I think the pandemic has affected both of those. People are depleted a lot of times being polite. And I love, Asha, what you're talking about reading the room. It's hard to read the room if you're burned out, if you're overworked, if you're stressed, and the pandemic increased the strain that people feel at work. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to do those good things if you just don't have any resources, you're depleted as a person. Mm-hmm. And that's unintentional. And then there's the skilled, the people who are unskilled. And I think that the pandemic not only took a whole generation of people who would have normally developed better personal skills getting to interact in a live form, but also took those of us who had grown up with those skills and made them atrophy to some extent.
Right, right. So the practice and habit, I mean, this also then gets at, you know, Asha, you work with people of all ages. You give an example about dude and kids. And to the point about kids, just last year, the Missouri's Board of Education, it faced pushback for its proposed plans to implement state standards for social emotional learning. And simply put, social emotional learning is about teaching students how to manage themselves and make positive choices that benefit relationships with others. Hillary, what do we see happening when young people grow up to be adults with low emotional intelligence? Can you provide a very specific example of what you've seen?
Sure, sure. It's so short-sighted to take out that kind of curriculum. And a lot of curriculum that doesn't look on its surface like it's about emotional intelligence, like the arts and drama and music that's been taken out, is also towards the ends of developing emotional intelligence. Because as Asha talks about reading the room, you know, when you're in music, in your art, that helps to teach you about emotions and reading others. So I think that's short-sighted. That said, the research suggests that book learning doesn't tend to be very helpful, but a good program doesn't just present, okay, here's what pictures of faces look like when they're angry or sad, but it presents how to think about interacting with other people as constantly practicing and rehearsing and getting better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you had asked about the kinds of emotional skills associated with rudeness, and really two of them are very big. One is emotion recognition. Can you read other people and know that you have offended them mm-hmm. and backtrack from it, or understand even what they are in the mood for and not in the mood for? And then the other one would be emotion regulation. So when somebody does something really, really wrong, and you know, are you going to be rude, or are you able to just take a deep breath mm-hmm. and assume good intentions? And sometimes people just are not able to resist that impulse. And sometimes there are people who we really want to blow up at, and the only thing stopping us is the ability to control ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. I would like to jump in here and just to take a step back a bit in the importance of teaching young people those social skills. A Harvard-Stanford study found that 85% of one's success has everything to do with their soft skills, and only 15% of one's success has everything to do with their hard skills. Mm-hmm. So those types of teachings and those types of lessons at a very young age really does set people up for success in their professional lives and in their adulthood. And we're seeing a lot of times, and what I'm seeing with my corporate clients, for instance, is that those who are really struggling with those soft skills are struggling to move up. They're struggling to lead teams. It's costing them jobs. It's costing them promotions. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that we instill those lessons starting very early.
Right.
And I love these research studies, because when you dig into the methodology, what you'll often find is that the reason social skills are so important is because as a society, we select people on technical skills. So the technical skills are super important, but you already had them to get in the door. Mm-hmm. Now you're in the door, and the emotional skills have more variability.
Right.
So they're the ones that are distinguishing people from each other. And not that the technical skills don't matter, but you already had to have them. You've been screened out if you didn't have them. So now mm-hmm. they're not distinguishing you from the person sitting next to you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
No, nobody is perfect. Sometimes you are the rude one in a situation. Sometimes it's me being the rude one. And in that moment, that might not be something that a person recognizes. So Asha, what would you say is sort of the most common faux pas people commit when it comes to manners or rudeness, maybe lack of consideration of others?
Well, one of the pillars of etiquette, one of the three pillars, is consideration. So it's consideration, respect, and honesty. And so when we are not considerate of others, when we don't respect others, and when we're not honest with others, that certainly impacts if we are being rude or not. And Yes, it certainly impacts whether or not we're being rude. So if mm-hmm. I always tell people to make sure that you are being considerate, right? When you are in a room, make sure you're thinking about, like I said, how am I going to put this person at ease? I think one of the biggest things that I see in workplaces, like for instance, technology mm-hmm. is really important. So how we interact with other people on Teams and via email, that's become a thing. So there's a law that's in Paris that essentially says, or in France, that essentially says that it is against the law to email people after 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. So things like that create a really good work-life balance, and it forces you. Unfortunately, we need laws to force people to be considerate. but, you know, things like that are really forcing people to be considerate and really forcing people to think about somebody outside of themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great example, too, of where culture changes what's considered rude and not rude. Because at least in the U.S., the chair of one of the departments at WashU had this wonderful email footer that said, I may be emailing you outside of business hours because my work-life balance involves working after my children are asleep.
Yes.
Yeah. Your work-life balance may have different hours, and I do not it was actually quite a long email footer. I do not expect that. You to respond. And I thought that was gracious because it showed I am violating a norm, but here's why, and here's that I don't expect from you. I'm not being a role model that you should be working at 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that email footer, by the way. I see it a very often, especially with people who work, you know, they may live in New York City, but they have clients in L.A., or they may have clients in London or whatever. That is by far one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Hillary, are there some structural features that make it such that when we're talking about workplace civility, just make it much more difficult to concretely be more mindful in our interactions with people?
I do, because I think one of the biggest biggest difference between workplace incivility and personal incivility, like calling your parents dude, although I will say, in case my son is listening, I did call my sons dude, but only when they were doing things wrong.
Okay.
but it's a power difference, right? As you said, it's your dude is for peers or kids. But the biggest difference would be the instrumental stakes. So when you're rude in personal life, it's usually lack of knowledge, lack of effort. But often at work, people are rude deliberately because it is a power play.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're primates. And if you look at groups of primates, they battle for dominance. They have a hierarchy. Every primate knows which one is at the top, who's above me, who's below me.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't help but have a little bit of that left over from evolutionarily. And sometimes people are rude because they want to see if they can get away with it. And the top dog gets away with it, and the bottom dog does not get away with it.
Right.
So I think it's actually sometimes quite deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that, because I couldn't tell you how many senior people are being told that they have to come talk to me or they have to come take a lesson, because as you get higher up on the chain, right, you lose your manners. And that's because there is a power dynamic. And so you had to be kind to your boss, or it could have some very serious consequences if you weren't. But now you are finding people who are saying that they can be rude to essentially anybody they want because they are at the top. But that has to do a lot with people's character as well. You know, how people treat other people. I mean, that's essentially all that I teach in etiquette and in manners. It is very important to still treat people well, because that shows how truly good your etiquette is.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question, Asha? So I'm so curious about whether you think that people get more rude as they go up, or whether society selects rude people to advance.
I think that it's a little bit of both, actually. I think that people do get more rude as they get to the top, because some people think that they don't have time to be nice. Mm. That is something that I've heard quite a bit. So some people think, I don't have time to write a really nice email with a lot of fluff in it to you. So I'm just going to send one word responses, and you're going to have to perceive it the way that you perceive it. Well, people will perceive it the way that they want to perceive it. And guess what? Now you've lost, and your overturn has increased.
Mm.
People have lost respect for you. The board is wondering, you know, why the company is experiencing some shakeups and why people are leaving to go elsewhere. It's because you've lost your manners or because you've chosen to abandon them.
So this actually gets to something I was wondering about in preparation for this segment. You know, there are gender differences as well. And as women in particular rise through the ranks, that there's sometimes this expectation that they have to be, you know, blunt or like these one-word answers, or you don't use exclamation marks in your written communications. I mean, how do you teach people to be kinder without encouraging someone to be a doormat?
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a difference between being direct and being rude. And there is a study, I cannot think of the exact statistic right now, but there is a study that shows that women typically do fluff up our emails more, mm-hmm. period. So we are a lot more conscious of that. And so I think that it is absolutely okay with being direct. Hey, Sarah, I need you to, you know, handle this client meeting on your own next week. I will be out of the office for something else. Or, hey, Sarah, hope you're well. Would you please
exclamation point.
Smiley face.
Right.
We think that we have to fluff it up much more than we need to. Mm-hmm. We should be learning what the difference is between rudeness and being direct. I think that, you know, one thing that I found fascinating is that Barack Obama, when he was telling his oldest daughter how to pick a college, he was telling her, pick a college where, you know, it's okay to work with people with differing opinions, right? We've also gotten into a place where people don't want to hear differing of opinions. They think that it is rude or that you are being disrespectful when that's not what it is. So we're kind of also creating this culture where being direct is also being rude when we need to learn the difference between being direct and being rude.
Yeah, and that affects women more than it affects men. Mm-hmm. So I teach a women in leadership course, and one of the frameworks that we talk about is actually this psychological framework called interpersonal theory. And I like to joke, it is so fundamental that people accidentally rediscover it every 15 years who don't read each other's work. And the idea is that you can take everything about any moment of human behavior, like even our interaction right now, and you can put it on a two-dimensional grid where one dimension is about nice, not nice, so affiliation, and the other is about competent, incompetent. And so you end up with four quadrants, and everybody moves across these quadrants. But the upper, there, unlike most psychological frameworks, there is a right answer, which is you want to be competent and likable, mm-hmm. right? But that often women are put in a bind where you have to choose one or the other. You don't get both. Mm-hmm. And then you get the quadrant of not likable, but competent. And I think a lot of women executives are in a bind where, well, if I'm going to be direct, competent, address my needs, then I'm going to be put into the not likable box. And this is not in the framework, but I give those quadrants the name B word and pushover. And there is the sense that, and sometimes it's in our minds, but sometimes it's quite true, there will be backlash. Mm-hmm. And how do we think about that?
I would also like to just say, I think it's, and I'll make this quick, but it's important for women in leadership to have a diversity of mentors. Because when you have a diversity of mentors, especially if you have male mentors who are also really good leaders, and you're able to compare whether or not how you communicate is as effective with how they communicate. And if you communicate in a similar way that they do, and they still have a lot of respect and love and admiration from their team, is it because you're a woman, or is it because you need to improve how you communicate? Mm-hmm.
And as we wrap here, from each of you, last 30 seconds each, what is more important, demure or mindful? And what is a takeaway that you would offer for a person to get to a better place when it comes to dealing in particular with people who are rude?
I think mindful I would pick. Demure suggests to me that you put yourself behind, and mindful suggests to me that you're fully present, fully aware of your needs, aware of the other person, their needs, mm-hmm. and that would be a way to ensure that you're, what Asha said, reading the room.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that exactly. I would absolutely say mindful because you're being more intentional. Rather demure is almost like you're toning it down and you're not just being intentional. And like you said, Hillary, you know, reading the room is my that is my golden rule in etiquette.
So that's the takeaway.
There's never a downside to it.
That was Hillary Anger Elfenbein, professor of organizational behavior at Washington University in St. Louis, and Asha Hornaday, founder of the Modern School of Manners. They spoke with me about the rise in rudeness post-COVID and what makes for good manners last September.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.